Welcome to another episode of In the Name of Service, a podcast committed to sharing the untold stories of those who selflessly serve. Each episode features an interview with men and women who have been called to a variety of service-focused roles, such as the military, law enforcement, ministry, volunteering, and more. You aren't likely to know the names of the individuals you meet here, but our hope is by the end of our time together, you'll not only know their stories, but possibly be inspired to write your own in some way. Humble in nature, but strong in character, these everyday men and women showcase what it is to truly be a servant. We're glad you're here. Now here's your host, Dr. Barb Thompson.
Welcome to another inspiring episode of In the Name of Service. I'm your host, Dr. Barb Thompson. Today, I have the pleasure of introducing you to Joe O'Connor. Joe is a financial advisor, a coach, a mentor, and so many other things. I've had the pleasure of watching Joe for quite some time now, and I know you'll be inspired by his energy, his optimism, and his desire to help veterans across the world. So, Joe, tell us more about yourself.
Hey, Barbara, thank you so much for having me on your show, and it's a pleasure. And you know, I think what you do is absolutely marvelous. So tell you about me. Well, where do I start, really? I know you're going to drag some stuff out of me. I suppose to put it in a nutshell, if you were with me in 1988, right? I'm standing outside a gate, and I'm feeling pretty afraid. And it's not a gate that's closed behind me. It's not prison, right? I've just got out of the military after 7.5 years in the Royal Engineers. And I'm particularly proud, right? Because back only when I was 14, right? So 12 years previous, I was on a pilgrimage as a young boy to go with 46 other children to somewhere was a holy city in France. And my mum said, "You're going to sit down to Lourdes to help the sick." And I thought, I'm 14, right? And I'm thinking, yeah, what do I want to do that for? I want to be out playing with my friends. And she said, "Because, Joseph, I want you to realise that not everyone is as healthy as you are." I thought, yeah, okay. I thought, that's fair cop, Mum. Right, I'll go. So we went, and we're on the way, and during this 2-week pilgrimage, we're going to help people who are in wheelchairs or stretchers and take them around whenever they need to. So we're the chaperones. Anyway, just outside Paris, we leave from Liverpool, drive down south, get across to France, and just outside Paris, our chaperones for us, for the children, 46 children, and you've got kids, right? You've got children. Right? Can you imagine 46?
No.
Yeah, 46
so.
Kids on a coach. And our chaperone was one priest, two nuns, and three nurses. And did they know anything about children? Not at all. And, you know, back in those days, when was this? 1976, right? Health and safety didn't used to be a phrase you'd use together. You either had health or you had safety. There was no and, there was no connecting. So they said, right, off you get for a comfort break. So I go running down the coach, jump off, and I don't remember anything then. And then I wake up, like, what seems like 5 minutes later. And it's not, I open my eyes, I smell antiseptic, I look around and I see all white walls, and there's this big black fella standing over me, really towering. I'm thinking, wow, what's going on? And he's really friendly, it turns out. And he's standing over me, forgive the French accent or the lack of it. "Joseph, you were involved in a road traffic incident. You've broken both your legs, tibia and fibula. Your right femur is broken. You paralysed your right arm. You died on the roadside 3 times. You've been in a coma for 10 days and you're blind in your left eye." And I thought, ooh. And I got thinking, like, because I'm 14, right? And I hear conversations, oh, he might not walk again. And then my mother comes to see me, visit. She's got a bad heart. When she sees me, she ends up in the bed next to me. So that's two for the price of one, right? And I just knew that I wanted to join the military. So come back to 1988 now. I'm looking back on my career. I became a physical training instructor, combat engineer class 1, plumber and pipe fitter class 1, windsurfing instructor, you name it, I'd gone for it. I did my best, right, at all times. And I'm stood outside these gates and I think, right, That's the end of my military career. I'm scared. I haven't got the daily routines anymore. I really don't know what's going to go on with me. But I knew that I was starting as a financial advisor on the Monday. Right, and guess what? I knew nothing about money. Right, I've been in the military, right, for 7.5 years. I knew that at the end of the month, there was some money goes in, right? All my food and accommodation was paid for, so all I needed to do was spend it on leisure or car payments and stuff like that. So I'm starting as a financial advisor, and this is just in 1988, just after the 1987 crash. I think you might be too young to know it, remember that. But it was a bad time, right? And world crashed markets, and things weren't looking good. Fast forward to 1994, right? By the way, I've been a DJ and a doorman when I was in the army to earn extra bucks because you don't earn much. And 1994, I'm looking back over the last 6 years. I've achieved financial advisor status. I'm independent now. I'm married. We bought a workingman's club that had gone bust. Right, that's like a community club. We turn it into a nightclub because using my DJ skills, doorman skills, security, and also financial skills, I knew how to do stuff. And the mother and father-in-law was looking after the bar and running the pub and cleanliness. So I was going really good. But the thing was that I'd been tested psychologically, but it wasn't testing my mettle. You know, like when you're in the military, you want to always achieve and get physical training and test it that way. So I rejoined the Royal Engineers again in the territorials. You call it the reserves. We call it the reserve now, actually, as well. I went for the interview and they said, "Oh, Connor, right, yes, sir." He's a Scottish captain, really great guy, grey hair, he'd been around. He said, "You've been in the regulars, haven't you?" I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "Right, you don't need to do basic training." He says, "All you got to do is turn up for our first battle camp. And, oh, by the way, we're the bomb disposal unit." And I thought, oh, bomb disposal. Right, so I better read the pamphlets. And that was great. Loved it. Fast forward to 1999. And you know those big, heavy things you carry on your back? I've got all your kit in. Like Bergens, backpacks, whatever you call them. Right, going along, man. Yeah, rucksacks. Yeah, this is a 120 litre rucksack, so it's a big one, right? It's got all my kit in. Going along, it weighs about 70 pounds. And all of a sudden, it becomes light. Then it's heavy. Then it's light. Then it's heavy. Then it's light. Then it's heavy. And I thought, wow, that hurt. Right, and then I'm out. I wake up, smell antiseptic, look around, white all around me. I thought, not again. And there's a chap standing over me, really smart, in a suit, really smart looking, and he's well groomed. He said, "Mr. O'Connor," I thought, "Yes, sir." He said, "You were out with the SAS on selection. Gale force winds. The weather was horrendous. You shouldn't have been there, really. You don't mind if I use a swear word, do you?" He said, "The weather was horrendous, and you shouldn't have been there." I thought, no shit, Sherlock. You know, as if, tell me the obvious. And he said, "Yes. A gust of wind lifted you off your feet, threw you down a mountain ravine, you fell 197 foot, and you've broken your neck. C5 is shattered, C6 is broken." And again, right, I'm thinking, oh, what should I do? Well, I wasn't expecting this. But now, right, I've got a wife who's pregnant with my second son, and we've got a four-year-old that had only been playing football with a few days before. And this has been thrust upon me, this news. So I'm in denial, right? Because only days before, I could run sub-six-minute miles forever. And now I'm lying in the bed and I can't move. And I said, as the doctor's walking off, I said, "Oh, Doc, by the way, I've got a marathon to run in New York on Sunday. Can you patch me up?" And he turned, I don't know how he didn't laugh. He said, "Mr. O'Connor, I don't think you understand what I've just told you, dear. You're paralysed. You won't be doing any marathon on Sunday. In fact, you'll be fortunate if you ever run again." And then it hit me. And then fast forward, and then we can stop it there, actually, because I know you're going to be asking me a lot of questions now. But I wanted to give you a touch on where I am with experience and pain and how to get over it, if that makes sense.
you know, the guys that I've worked with in my career, injury can be a showstopper and make you question everything in life and the meaning of life itself, because you do feel like a whole different person. You're not able to do what you used to do. But thinking back on, and we heard a bit, we got a bit of, you know, your mom's personality and how she interacted with you. But when you reflect on those early experiences, are there things that come to mind or relationships that come to mind that you believe helped shape you into a person that had the ability or willingness to keep going when faced with trials?
I think I can put a lot of it down to how I was shaped as a young child, a young boy. And then the military certainly helped me when I got in, because it instilled in me the fact that you can get over pretty much anything that you want, so long as you've got the right mindset. And you're dead right, injury can be a showstopper, certainly. And I'm not saying, like, when the lads came in from 2-2 SAS, 2-2 regiment, obviously they came in the dark of night and all the nurses were saying, oh, look who's here, look who's here. And I'm thinking, when they're having a chat with me, I said, I know we weren't tactical, but you know when I fell, did I scream? And they said, oh, yeah, like a baby. Yeah. That was to put a bit of light relief in, I suppose. But the fact is that we're all human, right? And it doesn't matter what regiment you're in, where your background is. When you're down, then it can get really lonely. And no one knows, only you, what the pain feels like. Do you know what I mean?
Do you remember the moment lying in that hospital bed when you chose to, you know, have faith that there would be other outcomes possible for you, that you know, the decision that you didn't have to believe 100% of all of the prognoses that were being thrown your way?
That's a great question, you know. And what I knew was that I wanted to walk again. And I suppose my experience when I was 14, that I don't believe that you have to accept other people's limiting beliefs.
Yeah. Right?
Because they might not be able to do something. That doesn't mean to say you can't do it. It's like you'll earn or you will be as good as your five top friends. Right, so that's why you should be careful who your friends are, who you choose your friends. And coming back to your question, did I know? Well, I have no idea how having a positive outlook and a positive mindset helped me recover. What I can guarantee, though, is it did me no harm. And I accept also, because my injury is the same as Christopher Reeve, Superman, right? He was C5 and C6. What the difference between his injury and my injury is his spinal cord was severed completely. And the spinal cord, you know how that works. It's like it's got all the nerve endings that go down and it's protected by the bone, right? Well, it wasn't severed. It's been damaged, so I can't feel in my fingers or toes. I have pins and needles. But, hey, I can walk, so I'm happy. Yeah, definitely.
That's so good, Joe. Yeah, we're often, I guess, inclined to just believe everything we hear and see rather than thinking of the other types of possibilities that might be out there for us. So this injury, you know, you were going after a really physical goal in the military, and essentially it ended those dreams. So let's just talk about your military career for a moment. When you reflect back on it, what for you stands out as being most meaningful?
I'm extremely proud of the regiment I served with and the bonds I made with the people. And also, yeah. You see, the thing is, what I find amazing now, and I'm only in my later years, I suppose, that I can just reach out to any veteran from across the pond, right, anywhere in the world. And as soon as we know our service, then it's an instant understanding of each other. Because as soon as I see who someone served with, like whether it was Rangers, SEALs, infantry, artillery, our commandos, paratroopers, or any service, I just know what they've done. I've got an idea, and it just makes a bond straight away. And like with you, in psychology, I don't know as much on psychology as you do, because you've studied it a lot longer. What I do know, though, is you would have witnessed many situations and helped people through stuff that was going on. And you know what I find, and you can correct me by all means, post-traumatic stress disorder, right? What I find interesting is that some people have more difficulty than others forgetting stuff that's happened in the past. And you know, I don't understand how they do that, really. And it does influence how they will live their lives, how things affect them. And if they could just let it go, it'd be so much easier. Does that make sense?
Yeah, there's really no way to reliably predict who's going to be haunted by the things that they experience. I mean, even with the high performers I've worked with in the past, you know, they may have done some like incredibly dangerous missions, risky training or scary, you know, been in scary situations. And sometimes it's confusing why this one situation seems to haunt them. But what we know about the brain is that it's built for survival and it's trying to keep you alive. And so, you know, sometimes it just takes those snapshots of the cues and the different variables in your environment and labels those as dangerous. And that's what tends to keep people, you know, on edge and unable to move forward as quickly. I mean, the goal is always to move on, to grow. It just looks different in some ways, and that's hard to predict. So let's talk about you, though. What do you think in your military career was most difficult for you?
Well, the injury obviously was probably the most difficult because my freedom was taken from me,
right.
I suppose.
Right.
Earlier,
yeah.
Than I planned, because I went for selection and I was the equivalent of an old age pensioner, right? Because I was 37 when I went for it, so I was going for this and I put everything in. And because I've been a physical training instructor, I knew what was required, and I also knew that I had to give it everything that I had. And I was training like seven days a week, so because I wanted it so badly. So when it was taken away, then that was tough for me. I've got to admit, yeah, that was real tough.
Right. I mean, you had dedicated so much of your life towards this one goal, and when it can't be completed, it's easy to think, well, what was all of that work for?
Yeah, and I've got to say as well that my relationship, I didn't spend time with my son. I wasn't able to do the stuff that I would have done. When my second son was born, right, I wasn't in the best of states to be able to play with him. And that was difficult. Then I went to a divorce and stuff. And around about 2003, Well, 2001, you had 9/11, didn't you? And that was so, because I remember watching that and I was thinking, wow, what's going on? And I suppose that's when terrorism became real for you guys in America then. Because we've had Northern Ireland, we'd had the Falklands, we've had stuff all the time. And then that brought it home. And I know a lot of people in the US sort of got patriotic and joined up.
Definitely true, yep.
Yeah, and in 2003 then, Iraq 2 kicked off, then Afghan in 2009, 10. And it got me thinking, right, what? Unfortunately, I got back to work as a financial advisor because I just use this. I don't have to use these so much. And then hearing the tragic events of IEDs, improvised explosive devices, you know that, well, I know it's bomb disposal, right, EOD, that they're not meant to kill you. They're meant to injure you. So when your buddies come in, they'll just get more of you. So when the media was, in my opinion, sensationalising it, really, or just over-reporting on it if they weren't sensationalising it, and getting everyone feeling negative. But I knew then that for the deaths, they were the fatalities, tragically, were being reported. I knew there were a lot of guys injured as well, men and women, right? So that got me on the path to learning how the mind works, and I became a master coach, and I understand about hypnotherapy and timeline therapy and how this mind works, because I wanted to help. What I didn't want to do, though, is just come along as a military trainer would and say, right, on your feet, up, come on, let's go. Because that might work for some guys, but it won't work for everyone, will it?
Right. I mean, that's so true. And the approach really does matter if you want it to land and produce results. So in your experience with coaching, what would you say are some things that you believe make it work for you and the people that you work with?
Right. Well, thanks for that great question. So what I did, because I've been in business now 36 years, so I know you're supposed to say there, like, no, you can't be that old, Joe. You're only not like 32. And I have a mastermind program, which is 13 modules. And I say, like, my mission now is to help 1 million veterans and business owners achieve the goals, dreams, and aspirations they deserve. It may seem like a big target. I reckon you can quite easily help a million. Right, because I'm not talking about me talking to 1 million people individually. Right, I'm talking about a legacy. Right, where I talk to someone and they may talk to some buddies that they know, and it just goes on. And that's the real drive for me. And so, to answer your question about coaching, what I recognise is that it's important to be present when you're speaking with someone. You appreciate this, I know. And you've got two of these, two ears and one mouth. So ask the question and then shut the front door, right? Just shut up and listen. Because you're great, you ask me the questions and then that's it. And I suppose you'd only interject if I become silent and I'm thinking, what do I say next? So that's what I love doing. And I love being present with them, and I think that the better your questions, the better the answers are. And I'm always reminded of Rudyard Kipling. If you want to Google Rudyard Kipling's Six Wise Men, and the poem, right, is I knew six wise men. They taught me all I knew. The names are were, what, why, when, how, and who. And whenever we went to a bomb, an incident where there's unexploded ordnance, they're the questions we'd ask. So, where is it? What do you think it is, or what happened? Who planted it there? Who did you see? When did it happen? And how did it happen? What was going on before? And then, if you really want, because I use this question very sparingly. Because it's accusatory. Why?
Why, yeah.
Why did you do that?
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean?
Right.
What do you mean? Oh. So I love the thing like Simon Sinek, your why, finding your why. Like, and when your why is big enough, the how will come. I like it in that context. I'm always cautious about asking that question, though.
I'm actually so glad that you brought that up, Joe, because I've been curious. I know just watching you desire to help other people live up to their potential, and you feel that that's unlimited. But it does seem that recently, and I don't know if it's just because it is more frequent or because we're able to see people's thoughts online all the time, but people are struggling to find their purpose, to find their why. And you have done that and you help people do that. So I'm curious to hear your thoughts on that, like how you found it for yourself and how you're helping other people find theirs.
Yeah, thank you. Do you know, I suppose as I've got older, you start to reflect differently. Because when I was younger, because in my Pathfinder, which we'll come on to shortly if you'd like me to talk about it, that's got everything of my life in it. It's a program. And what I did is, after my incident, I was lying in bed and I couldn't write. But this just kept going on through my mind. The man who thinks he can. The man who thinks he can. And so I wrote the poem, The Man Who Thinks He Can. I was talking about, and it was very alpha male, right? I've got to put my hands up, Bob. It was very alpha male. It was all about power and going forward. And it's not about the man who, and then it's the man who thinks he can. No matter what you think, the race isn't always won by the strongest, fittest man. It's always won by the man who thinks he can. That's how it finishes. Yeah. But then 10 years later, I started to mellow. And I've seen it, because then I wrote another poem to go with it. And it changed, because then I was talking about more collaborative stuff, right? And recognising, and it was a softer approach. And then recently, in 2019, I did another one. And there'll be another one coming in 2029, because I want to see how I change. And then it's more about the one who thinks he can. Not male, not female, not gender specific. It's just about recognising the team effort, whether it's male, female, black, white, creed, whatever it is, it doesn't matter. But I always, coming back though, to when I was in the military, I was always like that anyway. I didn't care. Then I just wanted someone who could do the job.
Yeah, I think when you are part of a team effort, the competency that everyone provides in their specialty is what makes them special. And it creates an opportunity for a really, you know, diverse team. So while I'm thinking about it, could you tell us more about Pathfinder?
Right, well, the Pathfinder is part of the program that I put together. Right, I do the Mastermind, which is a program which I'm also developing online. The Pathfinder comes in, it's based on my military career and also civilian career. And It's in three modules. There's the reconnaissance. And this is what got me going with this. I don't know about you guys in America, but every year in the UK, all these celebrities, right, bring out, round about October, November, bring out these journals. And on the front, it'll say, change your life, or make this year your best year yet. And I was looking through this one, and this was some years ago, because it's taken me 7 years to write this Pathfinder. And I opened it, I was looking for these words of wisdom that would change my life, right? And I opened it, and they were blank pages. Oh, but they had done a deluxe version because there were lines in it as well. So at least you had something to write on. And at the bottom of, I don't know, every other page or every five pages, there'd be a motivational statement from the Dalai Lama or from someone, Steve Jobs, I don't know, Richard Branson, and just one of their phrases. And I think, right, so if you know how to journal, and you know to do it successfully, and you're going to use it to help you progress, then that's great. But the fact is that if you do not know how to journal, if you do not know how to write a successful business plan, if you do not know how to write a successful life plan, and you do not know how to plan success, full stop, that's about as much use as a chocolate fire guard, right? It's not going to do it. So what I got to thinking was, I want to write something for my sons. I want them to have a legacy for me that I can leave behind, and they can always say, well, my dad wrote this. But when I introduced it to a copywriter to work with and the publisher, she said, this is too good to take to your grave or just leave for your sons. You need to do something with it. And the reconnaissance, just the same as reconnaissance in military, because the Pathfinder is a specialist unit. You've probably got a unit like this in the States as well. The reason I call it a Pathfinder is because whatever obstacles you've got, right, you can get over them. You can get through them, you can go under them, over them, round them, smash through them. And the reconnaissance is to get your mind into a success mode. So, and it starts, do you know, if you Google Admiral Matt Raven, I think it is, yeah, on Make Your Bed, you might have seen that.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Very popular. Well,
my first chapter is Make Your Bed. Because we were taught to make your bed in the military first thing. At the end of the day, no matter how the day went, you had somewhere to come back to, which was safe. And then at the end of each chapter, because this one's a fairly easy read for people that haven't, who are not used to reading. So it gets them in the zone. Then the battle plan is where I really go into it. And that's when this goes through all sorts of things. And it's got lots of exercises in, because this is really to get you right. For instance, you know, if in the UK Special Forces, we do something that's called a trapezium, right? Now, scaffolding planks, two long planks, I don't know, about 6-7 foot long, and if they're a foot wide, you put them on the floor and then you leave a gap between two of them, which is 3-4 foot. If I said, right, okay, Bob, I want you to run along those, jump over the gap and get to the other side, on the other end, you could do that pretty much, couldn't you? It's fairly easy. Right, yeah. Now, let's put those planks 30 foot up in the air. Now, let's leave them 30 foot up in the air, still got a 4 foot gap. At the other end of the second plank, so you've got to get over that 4 foot gap. Everyone you love is in a burning building. And if you don't get to it,
you're
going to die. Right, are you going to go across? Are you going to walk those planks now? Mm-hmm. So that's about mindset. And this, the Pathfinder Strategic Advance takes you through lots of stuff like that to get you really down to where your mind can overcome anything. And then the Tail End Charlie is a strategic weekly planner. Every 4 weeks you check in to see how that's gone. And then every 13 weeks you review that, because there's four 13-week periods in a 52-week year. It goes through all of exercises. Because I like to see what good looks like, someone has actually filled it in, how it works for them, as an example. And to look at it, right, I've done it in a dead easy way. JoeTeams.com, that's JoeTeams.com. You go there and you can see there are free resources on there. And then there's other stuff like for $7 a month, $7 a month, you get access to lots of stuff. The Pathfinder is a, you have, there's a purchase, right? If you put RV1 in, RV, rendezvous, RV1, you will get a 33% discount.
Thank you. That is so generous. We'll be sure and mention that in the show notes, because I believe things like this help not only for the current period of time that people are in and the things that they're working on currently, but it also gives them a structure, you know, a framework to work from in the future as well. So they can use it, you know, anytime they need it. Joe, I want to switch gears just a little bit. You have so many ways that you contribute to the world right now. One of those is a podcast focused on telling veteran stories. What catalyzed you to add this to the ways in which you contribute to the world and to veterans in particular?
Because I know you come across a lot of guys who leave the military, right? And the same in the UK. I've just teamed up with an Armed Forces Business Centre, and I'm acting as their expert as a professional financial advisor, because I've been advising clients for 36 years right now, and I've seen booms and busts, bear markets, bull markets, I've seen every sort of market there is. And why I want to niche in veterans, and by the way, right, I may come across as really confident, but the thing is, I have my moments of doubt as well.
Because there was a time. That's so refreshing.
There was a time, right, where I wasn't sure whether to niche in the veteran market, because I wasn't sure whether it, could be as successful as I wanted to be. And then I just thought, well, hell with it. Let's just do it and see what happens. And the more conversations I have with guys, veterans that I've spoken to, and some that are still in the regular army, the more I recognise that we've just got skills that employers would die for. Right. Yeah. Now, I'm not... Yeah. And I'm talking about soft skills, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
If you can't type, or you can't code, or you can't do something, you can't bricklay, we can teach you that. What's much more difficult to teach is integrity, honesty, openness, team building, teamwork, all that stuff, right? That's cultural. That is invaluable. It's priceless to an employer. You know, I mean, and you guys are the same. We're all singing from the same hymn book.
You are doing amazing things, and you're doing so much. Could you tell us more about, on those days where you are feeling some self-doubt or a lack of motivation, what helps you personally stay on track, find your motivation again to show up and serve others in all the ways that you do?
Great question. And do you know what? I'm going to give you a real life situation here, right? COVID, right? I couldn't exercise as much as I wanted to. And as you so rightly pointed out in the beginning, I'm no spring chicken anymore. So it gets in November this year to mark 25 years since my incident. I'm going up an unclimbed peak in Nepal. It's only 6,591 meters.
You say only?
It's the biggest one I've done, I got to be honest. But I recognise, right, that I got to get in shape. And when I first started, and I've only started my training program like 4 weeks ago, and when I woke up in the morning, I was thinking, do I really want to do this? Because bed's really comfy.
Right.
Bed's
warm.
Quite comfy.
Yeah.
You know? And you know, and I'm going to have to get out, and I'm going to have to go through some pain, right?
Yeah.
Because there's got to be pain, because I haven't been exercising as much as I wanted to. So anyway, I got on the cross trainer, played some music, because did you know, you probably do, if you play tunes that you like, you will get a 10-20% better output. Yeah, so you play the music, so I put on some of my favourite tunes, and I was burning in the first 4 minutes. I was burning. 8 minutes, I started to get a bit warmer, and then after that, I was cool, right? And already in 4 weeks, I have increased my workload by 95%. Yeah, now the thing was that I didn't start at a tremendously high period, but the thing is, and I won't give, the reason I'm not going to say how much I trained and for how long is because I don't want to set a benchmark, I don't want to set a precedence for someone who hasn't trained at all. Because, and I was thinking about this, because I'm probably going to do a video blog on this. Whether you're really unfit or really fit, you've got a base level. It's just that if you haven't trained for ages, your base level is lower. All you've got to do is record where you start, and then you can only get better by exercising more, which then makes you feel better, doesn't it? And so now I'm on week four. I've taken before and after photos. You remember like Charles Atlas and all that? Well, at the minute, I look like I drink about 20 pints of beer a day compared to what I used to be, right, with a six-pack and everything. So not like that at all. And then I'm going to take photos as I go along. And it isn't about me being an Adonis or anything. It's about me being vulnerable and showing, look, this is how you start. And this is how you can get, this is how you can be, so long as you keep it going. My mission is not to be able to run sub 6 minute miles anymore. My mission is to train so I can have more Christmases than I would do if I didn't.
Well, thank you for sharing that example. It's a really fun one. So you really like to set forth exciting goals for yourself and keeping track of where you started and your daily progress helps feed your motivation. And it also sounds like those outside goals, they're not business related, they're personal, but they fuel all of your efforts. So anyway, really fun example, and best of luck to you. I know that you will really crush that goal. Tell us this, Joe, if there's someone listening today, hearing your story, and they too feel like they've got a lot to give, they want to do something big, like they have a desire to do something bigger than themselves, a desire to serve others, but they don't yet know how or where to get started, what is your advice for them?
I would be, because I know we covered this when you were good enough to come as a guest on my podcast, The Veterans of Success. Now, I'd get yourself a good mentor or coach. And the difference, like, how would you say it? What analogy would I use in America? Right, we got Alex Ferguson, who was the football manager for Man United, right? And then it was Kenny Dalglish, who played for Liverpool, and then he ended up being a manager. Now, that's a perfect example. Alex Ferguson wasn't a great footballer, but he was a fantastic coach, manager.
Yep. Right.
Mm-hmm. Kenny Dalglish was a fantastic manager and a fantastic football player. So like, Kenny Dalglish falls into the category, for me anyway, of being a mentor. Because he was great at football and he could manage it. Alex Ferguson was a good coach because he couldn't play football at a really high level, but he had a good idea. But he was a magnificent coach and he could get the best. So that's why I say coach and or mentor. And someone who can give you some tough love. And then, because you may need, if you want to start helping others, first of all, you got to understand how you're going to get your message across, right? So you need a mentor and coach to help you. Now, the fact is, right, as soon as those terms come in, you're thinking, ka-ching, how many dollars is it going to cost? But there are a lot of people out there who'd help just to help you along anyway. And if you ask the right people, you'd be surprised who can help. Because I give back to guys as well, because it's not all about the money. We need money, yeah, because you gotta feed your family, not your ego. The fact is, though, that many people are happy to give a bit of their time. And you know, if you've got a really good idea, you might get someone who says, right, I'm with you on this, and we'll profit share. I'll help you to get your message out there, and I'll help you to deliver it. You know, for that, I'll keep coaching and mentoring you, and we'll just split the difference. So I'll pay it forward, if you know what I mean.
Well, let's circle back to the tough love portion. You say you need someone who's going to support you, but also give you that tough love. Tell us, in your opinion, why that is so important for someone who wants to grow and contribute.
Well, Can I just go back to when I was in military training? I remember it was winter, right, and the ground was really hard. And we were out on the final exercise, FTX, and I was 18, right? I hadn't been away from home, right? So we'd gone through eight weeks of grueling training, basic training, and we're out on this final exercise. I've got a pickaxe, and my mate's got a shovel. And he said, right, okay. And we were all cammed up, camouflage, we were all in weapons. He said, right, you've got to dig a six-foot trench, a six-foot deep trench. And we'd been going at this for hours, and we must have gone down about a few inches because the ground was like ice. And the sergeant came along, and he said, O'Connor, he said, you're finding it tough, are you? And then I thought, you know it is. I looked at him and I thought, if I say yes, I'm going to get a rollicking. And if I say no, I'm going to get a rollicking. Right. So I'm not going to wince. So I just looked at him and fluttered my eyelids. And he said, "O'Connor, I suppose you want some sympathy, don't you?" I said, "If I say yes, I'm going to get a rollicking. And if I say no, I'm going to get a rollicking." So I just looked at him and fluttered my eyelids. He said, "O'Connor, the only place you'll get sympathy is in a dictionary between shit and syphilis. Now dig." And that was tough love for me, because that's all. You see, the thing is, I've never forgotten that story. Ever. And
you're
that was
today. Yeah.
And that was over 40 years ago. And that's why tough love is important. And I'm not talking about being heartless or uncaring. I'm talking about someone who can recognize your talent and help bring it out of you without necessarily, because there's a time to put your arm around someone and say, "Come on, let's crack on. What's happening?" And then there's another time to say, "If you don't move it, mate, you're going to get my size 10 up your jacksie." And I think that it's knowing that the difference of when to use that. And if you can find someone who can do that, that can really be the difference between success and failure.
Well, Joe, I've taken up just about enough of your time today. Thank you so much for being here with us. If people have a desire to contact you or learn more about all of the different things that you're doing, what's the best way for them to do that?
Well, something that I didn't touch on, actually, and it's just coming to my mind. Transformation for Veterans is a charity, if you remember. And we're building lodges. And I want to prove the model in the UK first, because I want it to be the same thing, tough love. I want the family to come on the journey, because I don't know about you, you may have seen it where a veteran goes away to, I don't know, a stress clinic and gets rid of the PTSD or whatever anxiety, comes back, and the husband or wife is at home with the children, and they come back and say, "Hey, honey, I'm home. I'm cured." And you think, "You swine. We've suffered for X amount of years.
Right.
You go off on a swanny for a few weeks, come back, say you're cured, and what about us?" Yeah, and you totally buy into it because of what you do. And so we're building lodges, a number of lodges, with training centre for the children and the husband and wives, as well as the veterans. And we're going to teach them business strategies and how to overcome stuff. And that's what I want to do. And people can get in touch. You can have a look at that. That's transformationforveterans.org.uk. Then to see about the Transformer products, you can go to joeteams.com. where you see lots of the stuff I do. We also run a Transformer Business Network, so I teach, I bring veterans together, and I'm going to run it for Americans as well. I'll do it in your time zone, and I'll show you how to business network and how to connect with each other. Because there's another way to connect. You know, 1 million people is dead easy, right? Because, yeah, it just is. And then you can have a look at the website, www.thetransformer.co.uk. And that's how you can get in touch, because I've got a team that help me. I just want to, unlike Spike Milligan on his grave headstone, he was a real dry, satirical comedian. And he put on his headstone, "I told you I was ill," which I think is quite funny, actually. On mine, I just wanted to say, he gave it his best. And I think if we can all do that and all say that, then that's pretty much job done.
Well, thank you so much, Joe. It's been a pleasure having you. And I will be on the lookout, as I'm sure our listeners will be, for the good work that you are doing in all of your endeavors. Thank you for your service, Joe. And thanks for being here today.
Thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure to be on your podcast. I've really enjoyed it. And thanks for your service, too.
Hey, everybody.
everybody. Thank you for joining us for another incredible episode of In the Name of Service. If you enjoyed today's episode, please like and subscribe. And of course, feel free to share with those you feel would like to be inspired. Have a difference maker in your life that you'd like to see featured? Reach out to Dr. Barb Thompson at inthenameofservice@gmail.com. We'll see you next time.